George Santayana wrote this: "Those who do not learn the lessons of history are destined to repeat them." Do you believe that?
Yes.
I do. Oh, you can leave on the house, the second row. There we go. That's good. Do you have enough light? Is it okay? All right. In 64 AD, the Emperor Nero had a desire to build the largest palace ever, the Domus Aurea. Can you imagine a palace, 200 acres? Wow. The problem was, the spot where he wanted to build in Rome was all cluttered with houses and apartments. And it seemed like an anonymously set fire would be the way to handle those houses and their inhabitants. Remember, this is the Nero who murdered his mother and kicked to death his pregnant wife in a fit of rage. Well, when the public backlashed against him for those fires, he said conveniently that it was this fast-growing group of Christians that had caused the fires. And so began the first wave of persecution, in which both the Apostle Paul and Peter were murdered, 64 to 67 AD. Tradition has it that Peter had to watch his wife be killed. Do you have in the forefront of your memory that every one of the apostles was martyred? We use the word martyred, but really it's murdered, beheaded, crucified, burned for the cause of Christ. Only the Apostle John, who wrote the book of Revelation, died of natural causes. Nero used his great circus, known for the most popular chariot races, as the scene for a mass burning of Christians. This is an 18th century painting. And can you see the Christian brothers and sisters here on these long stakes? They wrapped them in burlap and reeds so that they would burn long and well. And he lit the city of Rome with the bodies of our brothers and sisters. Over the next 250 years, at the whim of any emperor, Christians lived in persecution. The Roman policy had always been any religion was okay as long as it did not say that another religion was wrong. All the gods had to get along. Of course, that did not go well with grounded and faithful Christians. One writer states that a wave of persecution was begun by an upsurge in cholera, people blaming their Christian neighbors for the disease. After mobs slaughtered all the Christians, they looted everything of value and burned their homes. But most Christians died, thousands upon thousands of Christians died, because they would not deny Christ and make a sacrifice to the idol god. In the year 203, the emperor Septimius Severus, and I brought his coin along to show you all today. You're welcome to come up afterwards. I brought a Roman ring that you can try on from the year 200 AD. And then this is his actual denarius, minted in Rome in 196. Septimius Severus decided that he was going to enforce a law making Christianity illegal. Christianity was exploding, and the morality was really causing trouble in Roman society. So if you were already a Christian, you survived. But it was now illegal to become a Christian. In the great city of Carthage, Christian deacons were teaching a home Bible study to some young slaves, Revocatus, Saturnus, Secundulus, Felicitas, or we might say Felicity, and Perpetua. Perpetua was the married daughter of the home. She was 22 years old. She had a nursing son, and she became converted to the Lord. It seems that her mother and brother had previously been converted, but her father was an avowed pagan. Perpetua, in her own words, writes a journal of her experience. This is the earliest known writing of a Christian woman. And when I read to you, it is a direct translation from her Latin journal. When we were still under legal surveillance, my father was like to vex me with his words and continually strove to hurt my faith because of his love. "Father," said I, "do you see this vessel lying here, this pitcher? Can it be called by any other name than that which it is?" And he answered, "No." And she said, "So can I call myself not other than which I am, a Christian?" Her journal continues, "A few days after we were baptized, we were taken into prison, and I was afraid because I have never known such darkness. Oh, bitter day. There was great heat and very cruel handling by the soldiers. And lastly, I was tormented to be without my child. A Roman prison is a very scary place. We cannot even imagine men and women all together in the same cell, no rules for treatment. Any food had to be brought in by your family. And any help was obtained by bribes." Back to her journal. "When Tertius and Pomponius, the blessed deacons who ministered to us, obtained with money that for a few hours we should be taken forth to a better part of the prison and be refreshed. Then all of them going out of the dungeon, I suckled my child that was now faint with hunger. And being careful for him, I spoke to my mother, and I strengthened my brother, and commended my son unto them. I sorrowed because I saw that they sorrowed for my sake. Such cares I suffered for many days. And I obtained that the child should abide with me in prison. And straightway I became well and was lightened of my burden and care for my son. And suddenly the prison was made a palace for me so that I would sooner be there than anywhere else." Can you imagine spending days away from your nursing child with your heart breaking and your breasts aching in the filthiest of prisons that we cannot fathom? Just the sheer joy of being reunited. Amidst their waiting for trial, Perpetua and Saturnus have dreams about being welcomed into heaven. This is an 18th century painting of this next scene. The artist portrays Perpetua, her father, and her infant child. Perpetua's journal. "A few days after, the report came that we were to be tried. My father returned and begged me to cast down my faith, saying, 'Have pity, daughter, on my gray hairs. Have pity on your father. If I am worthy to be called father by you, if with these hands I have brought you into this flower of youth, and I have preferred you before your brothers, look upon your brother, your mother, your son, who will not endure to live after you. Give up this resolution. Do not destroy us altogether.' This he said fatherly in his love. Kissing my hands and groveling at my feet, with tears he named me not daughter, but lady. I grieved for him, saying that it shall be done at the tribunal whatsoever God shall please. For know that we are not established in our own power, but God's. And he went from me very sorrowful." Is there any scene more tragic than a father begging of a daughter, trying every appeal to her to get her to save herself, falling on his knees, calling his favorite child lady? But he just did not understand. "A multitude of people gathered the day of the tribunal, and other converts, revocatus, being asked, confessed to be Christians. So they came to me, and my father appeared there also, holding my son, saying, 'Perform the sacrifice. Have mercy on the child.' Even Hilarion, the procurator, said, 'Spare your father's gray hairs. Spare the infancy of the child. Make sacrifice for the emperor's prosperity.' And I answered, 'I am a Christian.' And when my father rushed at me to slap me down because of my faith, he was smitten with a rod, and I sorrowed for my father's harm." Realize it would have been so easy. Many Christians were doing it. You handed over a tray of grain or a small dove and just said, I am not a Christian, and walked away. Her father could not comprehend. Even the day right before they went into the arena, he came and began to pull out his beard and fall on the ground, begging her. Never has a father loved a daughter more. But his hope was only in this world, and hers was in heaven. Did these new Christians even know the story of Daniel? All night in the lion's den, and the king the next morning, Daniel, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to save you? O king, live forever. Did they hope? Did they wonder? Secundus, one of the men, died from the conditions in prison. The pregnant slave girl, Felicity, was now almost 9 months along as they waited in prison. As it was illegal to put a pregnant woman in the arena, the child being guiltless, she gave birth early in prison, giving her baby girl to a Christian sister to raise as her own. Perpetua's journal ends the day before they go into the arena. The Carthage arena you can see remnants of today. The story is then recorded by perhaps Tertullian, a Christian observer. They were paraded into the great Colosseum arena with 50,000 people in attendance. In the Christian Observer's own words, Felicity, who had just given birth, walked quietly, coming from blood to blood, from midwife to gladiator. Perpetua came confidently, singing psalms of victory. Remember, these are new Christians. They would have learned songs from the deacons who visited them in prison. Think of all the ways that we comfort ourselves. Had they read the account of Stephen? How many memory verses did they even know? Yet they believed with complete confidence in a God who would raise the dead. The women had to stand by and watch as Revocatus and Saturnus were killed by a leopard and a boar. Perpetua and Felicity were then stripped naked and covered in nets to entice the animals' interest. But even the bloodthirsty Carthaginian Roman crowd booed and groaned at the tender sight of young girls' bodies, naked, nursing mothers, Felicity just days past giving birth. And as the goal was to entertain the crowd, the two women were brought back to the holding cell and clothed again. Perpetua was first thrown into the arena. And when she saw that her robe caused her legs to be uncovered, these are the actual words of the Christian Observer, she drew it over to cover her thigh, mindful rather of modesty than of pain. So she stood up. And when she saw that Felicity was smitten down, she went up and gave her her hand and raised her up, and they both stood up together. Perpetua's last words to a Christian nearby: stand fast in the faith and love one another, all of you, and be not offended at my sufferings. A mad cow was sent to charge at the young women, perhaps as a crude joke for their nursing mother status. After some time, bruised and bloodied, a gladiator was called in to finish their deaths. Perpetua and Felicity kissed one another that they might accomplish their martyrdom with the rites of peace. When the swordsman's hand wandered, Perpetua herself steadied the blade at her neck for the last blow. These young people became Christians, knowing the consequences were huge. Imagine this scene today. 49er Stadium, almost filled to capacity with wild, raging fans who want to see death, human death. Now, don't imagine me and Cookie huddled there in the middle of the arena. We have to watch the scene in horror, perhaps praying somehow, some way, the Lord is going to save these young ones. I mean, this can't be right. They've done everything right. They became Christians, knowing the consequence could possibly be death. And there they are in the arena, praying together. Think of these young, precious women here, the future of the church. Their whole lives ahead of them. Imagine them clinging to each other just because of their new, passionate faith in Jesus. They're going to be murdered as entertainment. At some real moments of life, this is us, clinging to each other with Satan's arrows in full attack. Think back to Romans 12:3, that by testing, you may discern what is the will of God. Were they absolutely positively doing the right thing, becoming Christians when they realized the truth of the gospel? Yes. Were they absolutely positively doing the Lord's will when they confessed to be Christians at their tribunal? Yes. Why didn't the Lord save them? These were sweet girls doing the Lord's will. They were going to raise their children to be Christians. Young mothers, that's our job, right? The consequences of doing the Lord's will is not our business. Our job is to do the Lord's bidding and leave the consequences up to Him. If I were to ask you for a show of hands, how many of you want to know the Lord's will for your life? Every one of you. Do you understand that can mean having your families turn their backs on you? Like Perpetua's father, losing your income, being separated from those you love, giving your last breath? Rewind back to the middle of this true story, 203 AD. What would have happened after the first leopard bites and bumps? The governor stood up and he became convinced that this was wrong and wanted to save these girls and gave them the big thumbs up. They were brought out of the arena and their wounds were healed and they returned to life. What would their reaction to daily life be? How would they have lived the next 40 years? Self-centered drama queens, narcissistic, whining the lumps of life on their third century Facebook. Oh, I have a headache today. I can't stand it. I'd be complaining about the roads and the weather. Would they be texting their friends during every occasion, not able to be alone with their own thoughts or have any time to read the Bible? I don't picture it. I think the moments of life would be very precious to them. I think they would likely take the gift of life very seriously. God has chosen me to survive and live another day, and I will use every breath for Him. Well, what about us? We've just heard the reading of the story. I think if they were here with us right now, they would be drinking in every part of our assembly together. What if this never comes again? There's a new law. You can't gather together and say that lying or dishonesty or immodesty are wrong. Do you believe that could happen?
Yes.
Maybe not in my lifetime. What about in theirs? What about in some of our young ones' lifetime? It is not popular to have standards. Do you work with people who gossip about you or talk bad about you because you don't drink or party? I do. You know what? These sweet girls died They were humiliated and died just because they were Christians. I think I can endure a few put-downs. Perpetua and Felicity gave their lives just because it was right. They gave their babies over to others to raise, knowing that the God of the entire world, who knows anguish and pain, would keep his promise to take care of their son and daughter. You see, we don't know his ways. We think we do with all our technology and our laws and our cause and effect. We think we should control how things go. But he'll remind us. Oh, it seems like Satan has temporary victory. He wields evil around us. But in the true end of life and resurrection, God has the power. You see, the time of their death is not our business. The time of my death is not my business. The time of your death is not your business either. Remember Pompeii? 13 minutes when people went from life to death. Entire city frozen. What would you say, knowing that you were to die? I think about the World Trade Center. Flames and smoke coming from below and above. And people making that last phone call home, leaving messages. Mom, I love you. Whatever else happens, remember the love. But today in this moment, we survive. And we choose to live in the genuine joy of the Lord. Mm-hmm. The passion that remains after Satan's best attempt to knock the life out of you. Mm-hmm. Oh, and he's doing it. Mm-hmm. He's trying. As humans, most of the time, we only understand true joy when we have been to the depth of despair. Joy is not like happiness, finding a great sweater on sale. A joyful life comes from obeying and living free from guilt. A meaningful life is very special. It is those little obediences, those little decisions made hundreds of times every day, that transform your mind to be like him. Let's look at Romans 12, verse 9 through 13. Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. And seek to show hospitality. That is joy. These are the obediences that build Christian character and build loving congregations and families. Loving means we respond to people's needs. We reassure someone, you're stronger than you know. We listen when people talk. We make the realization that it is pride to always talk about yourself and bring attention to yourself. Do you draw attention to yourself in every conversation? Your job is more difficult. Your finances are worse. Your burdens are heavier. You need more sympathy and attention. Count how many times you say I in conversation. Are you asking for more comfort than you're giving? Have you noticed that those who do the most whining are not necessarily the ones who are really injured the worst? I've certainly wondered about the grouchy woman in this statue. This is very unusual. Everywhere I've traveled, every museum I've ever been in, and this is the only one. Some people will run down the ABC of their ailments: arthritis, bursitis, colitis, dermatitis, eczema, fasciitis, gastritis, and hangnails. You see, their ailments are their hobby.
And usually they're not the ones who are the sickest. Have you known someone who's going through chemotherapy who always has a smile on their face? Several years ago, I called a Christian sister who lives in a different state. Her mother was a dear friend of mine and had just gone to live with her because she was very ill. I asked the daughter, how is mom doing? And she spent quite a bit of time describing to me how the cancer has spread and the different treatments that they were doing. After a while, she turned the conversation and asked me, so how are you doing? And I started in about the mold we found in the wall and the sheetrock that had to be replaced and the new flooring, and it was costing all this money. And I paused and she said, well, but it's not like having brain cancer. You see, she was just at the point where she had to diaper her mother. And I felt about that big that I had whined about my problems, which were troublesome, but not life or death. I was whining, I was feeling sorry for myself, and I became very embarrassed. And I learned from it. You see, God has given us sisters for comfort. But let's keep our emotions in perspective. When you do ask for consolation and help from each other, take the counsel that is given to you. At least consider it. There's a lot of wisdom in this room. In regards to eternity, let's keep our troubles in perspective. The Christian life requires far more courage and perseverance than we can imagine. If your life does not take courage, you may not be requiring enough of yourself. If you have not experienced a storm in life, prepare yourself. The storms are coming. I watched for decades Jess and Ova Potter at the East Main congregation. They helped to start our congregation. They sat on the same pew with Geneva Williams, and they were always very close friends. As the decades went by, Ova lost her husband, Jess, and Geneva's children and grandchildren grew up and moved away, and the two women were left there together, always sitting hand in hand, and many times arm in arm. You see, God set it up this way, that we would be interconnected and intertwined. Sometimes it's all you can do is hold your sister's hand and say, whatever happens, I am here for you. I will be here for you, and I will see you in heaven. We are becoming more of something every day. More gracious. More helpful, more self-centered, more unkind in your speech, more dependable, more faithful, more loving. Take responsibility for who you are becoming more of. God does not see your makeup. He does not see what phone you use or what car you wear. He does not care the color of your shirt. He does care whether your makeup is too much and draws attention, or your shirt is too tight and causes men to look at your parts. You see, he sees the humility that drives those decisions. I think humility powers all honesty, modesty, and gratitude. Let's read Romans 12:3. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment. That is humility. Humility is the greatest power behind every kind of self-control. And we must humble ourselves to feel a thankful heart of gratitude. Gratitude is the focus on blessings. Sometimes if I'm having a rough day, I'll just start with the feet. Heavenly Father, I'm so thankful to have feet. I am thankful that I have knees that bend. I am so thankful that I can see. Thank you so much that I can hear your word. Or sometimes I'll start with some of you. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for Doris and Wendell and the example of them living the gospel before us. Over the years, I have tried to keep a gratitude journal. One writer calls it a trio of blessings, where you sit down every night and write down three things you're grateful for. I highly recommend this to you. The spirit of being grateful is what brings us joy. Gratitude is, Romans 12:9, hold fast to what is good. God has given me so much. I have breath today. I have purpose today. Roman Christians lived in an evil world, but they transformed their minds to thrive in Christian living and treat each moment as if it were their last. This past fall, we were in Los Angeles, and we walked along the Hollywood Walk of Fame. You know, the big stars that have people's names on them, famous people's names on them. I was looking for Julie Andrews. But I was amazed at how much I could tell you about all the people on the Walk of the Fame. Lines from their movies, who they married, what songs they sang, as we walked along, and it is miles long. I actually got quite irritated with myself that so much of my memory bank is filled up with this stuff. It doesn't matter to the Lord at all. I don't even think of myself as a big TV watcher person. I don't wake up and turn the TV on. I don't fall asleep with the TV on, but I grew up on it. I don't think anyone ever imagined how TV would change the course of humanity as it has done. I don't think anybody has fathomed what this technology obsession is doing to change humanity. Again, you see, we have the same powerful visual images they had in the ancient world. They're just electronic. And they are conforming us all the time to the way the world thinks. I remember being 6 years old and going with my family to the big movie theater to watch The Sound of Music. It was as if I became imprinted with the movie. From then on, for the rest of my childhood, I played Sound of Music. When I was little, I was Gretel, and then I became Marta, and then I was Brigitte. You know, the lonely goatherd and my favorite things, and I would line up my stuffed animals and dolls and teach them to sing, and try to get the cat involved. Can you sit, please, for your singing lesson? And you know the scene where they're popping up all around Salzburg? I would line them up on the bed, and then in the closet, and then outdoors, we'd line up along the way. And I had so much joy and so much memory of seeing this movie one time. Imagine if what I had seen had been Lady Gaga. They know. And you know the only reason I know who Lady Gaga is? I would call her a porn star, but she's actually MTV. The only reason I know who she is my little second and third graders told me about her. Have you seen people sitting together, but everyone's doing the iPhone stroke, or they're texting? Nobody's talking or sharing their day, or just being peaceful instead of being present. Your mind and your spirit is somewhere else, with someone else. This week, Monday night, blurb came on the news. I don't watch the news, but the next day I got on the computer and looked it up. This is brand new from Monday. They just did a study. Worldwide, almost 10% of children worldwide. That's all the developed countries, America, China, Japan, all the European countries. Almost 10% of children are now considered to be hardcore video gamers. It's called pathological gaming. And it's so severe that they are now linking a long-term mental illness with this addiction. Almost 10% of the children in our world. The moments of life are passing by, and we are being changed. I have taught myself to keep asking this question. Is it pleasing to the Lord that I spend my time this way? I may ask myself that question 10 or 12 times in a day. I may ask it 3 or 4 times in a day, depending on what my tasks are. Whether it's selfishness or self-controlling your spending or what you watch on television or self-control in your speech or your time management, I ask you to inquire of yourself, is it pleasing to the Lord? God's standards are incredibly high. We should refrain from even the appearance of evil. You are responsible for every word that you speak. You know, when the words are just dribbling out of your mouth, and the moment the breath is done, you know you should not have said it. Mm-hmm. I say, Kathleen, don't let your tongue wag and your brain lag. Matthew 12:36, on Judgment Day, we will give account for every careless word. It is not our abilities that show who we are. It is our choices. Don't sell yourself short by shooting too low. Remember, Jesus' sacrifice for you was entirely motivated by love. The highest of all deeds and thought is sacrificial love. He loved you even when you were selfish and full of yourself and stuck up and two-faced and mean. And if we love him, we'll transform our minds with all those momentary obediences and asking, is this pleasing to the Lord? Your life may not have big defining moments like Perpetua and Felicity in the arena, but I guarantee it will have thousands, perhaps millions, of little moments when you humble yourself and say, I am not going to eat until I study the Bible. Or you say no to spending time with people who pull you away from the Lord. Or you give to someone who needs you. William Barclay gave me a start on this idea that everyone's life is like a construction kit. You know the kind, right? Comes with the needle and the thread included and different patterns, different supplies that come along with it. Everyone's kit is unique, just like everyone's birth is unique. You're not here by chance. God allows certain things to just be there. You may have been given very many talents, but your home life was very difficult. Perhaps you had an alcoholic parent, but you have chosen to become very healthy emotionally and physically. Maybe you were left alone a lot as a child, but you've become a great Bible student and teacher. Maybe your family was extremely poor, but you had a mother who was a New Testament Christian. We're born with different gifts. But here's the message of the instructions. Build a meaningful life that honors God. Into that kit, we put every choice that we make, every breath, every word of whining or gratitude, every service to the Lord and others. You have so much power over what you add to the kit every day. Let's look at Romans 12:6-8. having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, in proportion to our faith. If service, in our serving. The one who teaches, in his teaching. The one who exhorts, in his exhortation. The one who contributes, in generosity. The one who leads, with zeal. The one who does acts of mercy, with cheerfulness. Yes, being merciful is a gift. You get to explore these gifts and say, oh, I can do that. You see, it's not courage for Perpetua's life that you need. It is courage for your life. Let me say that again. It is courage for your life that you need. Show God that you are willing to do the best job possible with the construction kit that He chose to give you. It takes great courage to move past an obstacle that could be paralyzing in your life. But what an inspiration. Don't minimize your importance to the cause of Christ in every moment. God compares you to no one. You are one of a kind. If you never existed, the world would not be influenced by your love, your passion, your devotion to the church, which is Jesus' body. A new Christian mom recently named her baby Felicity after hearing this story. What an honor to a young girl, a slave girl, the lowest of all humans in Roman society. To her legacy of Christian faith, that 1800 years later, a little baby girl is named after her. What would she feel like hearing the story of Felicity's courage? This little girl will need courage for her own life. I hope that her standard for herself will be very high. Felicity is remembered for her courage. How will you be remembered? Will you be remembered for a high standard of personal holiness? Perhaps as part of our high standard for ourselves, we can awaken the feeling of divine purpose for our life. Maybe we can minimize complaining by keeping life in perspective. Maybe appreciate others more and work harder at being loving to someone who's having a difficult time. Maybe we can show our convictions with our time, our words, and our Facebook. Maybe we can ignite within ourselves a love of the Bible and history, and keep intellectual curiosity alive. You know that scientists compared the brains of women who died in their 90s, and they compared the women's brain with writings that they had done in their 20s. The women whose writings in their 20s use a lot of rich vocabulary and character had very little Alzheimer's and brain tangles. By contrast, the women whose writings showed very little vocabulary and interest, brains were filled with tangles and Alzheimer's. Let's love learning. And let's love learning the Bible. Let's learn to be grateful for every morsel. When you pray over your food, do you ever use the word morsel? I try to use it every day. Dear Lord, I'm so grateful for every morsel. Because I know there are people who don't have food. And I'm grateful because I know every morsel comes from you. Will you be remembered as a Christian who constantly asked the question, is this pleasing to the Lord? And fought the temptation to be like the world? I don't know why Perpetua and Felicity did not live to raise their babies and teach them to read and to say prayers and to sing spiritual songs in the morning. I don't know why they did not live to see them be baptized. But I know that the Lord is in charge of everything, no matter how horrible it might seem, no matter how we suffer for the poor decisions and free will of others around us. God is in charge. You can trust a God who loves you so much that he sent his son, who volunteered with humiliation and rejection, died to save you. You can trust that he will care for your sons and your daughters as he cared for Perpetua's and Felicity's. What's the worst thing that could happen to you right now? Maybe you're there. Maybe it's health. Maybe it's finances. Maybe it's a relationship with someone that terrifies you. Whatever is the deepest, darkest prison hole that you can imagine, God is there with you. And we are there with you. The path of courage is very narrow, and there are few who find it. Would he ask something of you that he would not give his son, his only son? Remember, the standard is not what the world is doing. It's what you are doing, bringing your life to his standard. Let's try not to be like the world. Let's try to be as different as possible. Your deeds can be an inspiration and can create a splendid legacy that will endure for generations. How will you be remembered? Let's stand on the shoulders of those who've gone before us and remember their sacrifice and have the courage to walk our own path. William Barclay says that the value of a life is not in its length, but in its intensity. Let us live each day with the intense courage and love for Jesus, who gave all on the cross for us. I know that every quilt I have ever made will one day be ashes, because everything is going to burn up with fervent heat. Mm-hmm. Know that this moment could be your last, and that everything and everyone can be gone in the blink of an eye. Live with the intensity of that connection to what is really important, and the intensity of the connection to the God who created you. Thank you.
Please turn to page 346.